Okay, so Mr. Lewis, if, I think probably the best way to start anyway on Countrywide is if you could just sort of walk us through the progression of first the $2 billion equity investment in August of 07, the January 08 announcement of the $4 billion acquisition, and then the closing of the deal, I think in July of 08. Can you sort of take us through how you got to the equity investment, the acquisition, the closing of the acquisition, et cetera?
We originally really liked the mortgage product, but were a little less enthusiastic about the business itself. And some of that was just around residuals and accounting for that and not feeling as knowing that business as much as we knew some of the other businesses. Countrywide had been a customer a long time. There had been discussions on and off a long time. Would you have an interest? And we had never done anything before. But we were hearing more and more that they had a great sales force, great systems, and that their people really did know a lot about the business. And so we, as you said, I thought a good first step would be that preferred stock investment that we made. As we learned more about, as we got closer to them, we found that they did in fact have very good systems and a very good sales force, if motivated properly to even do the right products. And so we thought, as we went into December and they had an interest in selling, that we could structure a deal that would be a good benefit to our both to the shareholders and to help us with our customer base, because the mortgage product is such an important product to the consumer. And so that's generally how it evolved.
So what was the first contact between Countrywide and B of A that led to the $2 billion equity investment?
I don't remember exactly who called whom, but the head of our strategic planning was the person that was, I think, that was called and that followed up on the with the conversation.
And who was that?
His name is Greg Curl.
Okay, yes, he's prominent in the books. Now, of course, you know, Countrywide, the investment was made, I think, a couple of weeks after they had to draw the $11.5 billion on their backup lines when they weren't able to sell, I think, ballpark $13 billion of loans in their pipeline. That led me to believe, and maybe incorrectly, that Countrywide initiated a call to Bank of America saying, hey, we've got liquidity problems. Are you interested in helping us out?
It's my impression that it was Countrywide, but I'm just not totally sure.
But in any event, at some point prior to the $2 billion investment being made, it's your understanding that Mr. Curl received a call from somebody at Countrywide. Do you know who he received the call from?
I do not.
Did you know? So you don't know whether or not it was Mr. Mazzillo?
I do.
So what happens after Mr. Curl gets the initial contact from Countrywide?
A lot of due diligence around the liquidity situation, and again, I was not as involved as others, but we came to the conclusion that they did have a good game plan around their liquidity, and that the $2 billion would give them it would be a vote of confidence that would help, but that was good. But the reason we did it obviously was to have a more close strategic relationship, so that we'd have a dialogue that if in fact we made a decision to buy them at some later date, that we would be familiar with each other and it could be done more quickly, and the rate we thought was attractive on the instrument itself.
At the time of the August 2007 $2 billion equity investment, were there discussions at that time about an actual acquisition?
I don't recall any conversations with me about that.
Do you mean between you and Countrywide, or you and folks within B of A also?
No, with Countrywide. We said that's a possibility down the road, but it wasn't. We hadn't planned to do anything at that point in time.
Okay. And then do you recall whether or not folks at Countrywide were interested at that time, the August 2007 time frame, in B of A doing more than making an equity investment but actually acquiring the entire company?
Yeah, I do not recall.
Okay. Do you recall what the folks or what you were hearing from Mr. Curl or others about what the nature of the liquidity problems were?
No, I've forgotten all the details other than our people thinking that they had resolved the issue with the drawdowns and with the investment.
Mm-hmm. And certainly the drawdown of backup lines and the $2 billion in investment provided $13.5 billion of liquidity, but it was widely reported and I think understood anyway that drawing those backup lines was less than a positive signal to the market by Countrywide. Was there discussion about getting those things paid back?
I was not in those discussions, and so I can't say, in case they weren't, but I wasn't. Mm-hmm. Privy to them.
In the August 07 time frame, did the B of A due diligence also include things other than their liquidity positions? For example, were you looking at their origination practices, the types of loans they were originating?
To the best of my knowledge, but again, Greg was the point person on that and had a lot more involvement in it than I did.
Right, and believe me, I understand being CEO of B of A, you're not in there rolling through the loan files or the loan program guides figuring out what they are. But I suspect you're getting reports from Mr. Curl and his team, and I'm really just interested to the extent you can recall what you do recall about, you know, what they were reporting in terms of the types of loans that were being originated. If you don't recall, that's fine.
Yeah, what's prominent in my mind is more of a liquidity situation than the other things. I just don't remember.
Now, going forward, eventually on January 11th, 2008, the announcement of the $4 billion acquisition is publicly announced. Following the initial $2 billion investment, am I correct in assuming that due diligence continues throughout the rest of the year?
I'm not sure every day of the year there was due diligence, but there was a lot of due diligence prior to the signing of the agreement.
Mm-hmm. And to the extent you recall, when between the $2 billion August 2007 investment and the January 11, 2008 announcement of the $4 billion acquisition, when do discussions start or heat up about, okay, now we're going to consider acquiring you folks?
I don't remember precisely the date, but it was late in the year, in the November or December time frame.
Okay. So they, for example, Countrywide announced, I want to say on October 27, 2007, their third quarter numbers. You believe it was after that?
Yes.
Okay. One of the things that I noticed when I was looking at Countrywide's third quarter 2007 conference call, and they had a PowerPoint deck in there. One of the things they mentioned, in addition to the write-offs, was that they were tightening up their underwriting standards and the types of loans they were going to originate. And they actually said during the call, I think it was Mr. Samble, but I'm not sure, but there was a slide that went with this, slide 36, if you're interested, Reg, that showed that if they would have instituted these changed programs and tightened underwriting guidelines, that 89% of the loans that were originated in 2005 and 2006 would not have been eligible to be originated, which struck me. I saw you mouth wow when I said that, and that I said the same thing, maybe not as nice a word. But did you? And that's what I'm getting at again is the due diligence in looking at their origination activities, particularly given what you had said earlier in our conversation about B of A not getting in the subprime business, and of course, as I'm sure you know, Countrywide, you know, was originating a lot of subprime and had on book a lot of pay option ARM loans. What was B of A finding in regards to the quality of the loans on book at Countrywide?
Well, we found that there was significant write-downs inherent in the portfolio, and it took that effect in purchase accounting when we, you know, when we did the deal. But we also told them at the time that as soon as the deal would close, we would go immediately to our underwriting standards, and so we would. And as you said, in the meantime, they had begun tightening their standards as well.
Mm-hmm. Was, and if you, again, obviously, if you recall, were Countrywide's underwriting standards when B of A decided to buy them at the end of 2007, beginning 2008, were they, I guess, looser is as good a term as any, were they looser than B of A's terms at that time, do you recall?
I just recall that they were migrating toward, knowing that, that they were going to go to our standards anyway, they were migrating to our standards, but I can't remember how far along they were.
Okay. What about asset valuations, and in particular the pay option ARM book, since I think that constituted most of their ARM book assets. Were B of A's valuations different than Countrywide's valuations?
Well, we didn't have that book, and we did have significant write-downs inherent in the acquisition, but we didn't have a good comparison of our own. Using our own books.
Mm-hmm. And I understand that, and I'm sure you're happy you didn't have pay option arms on your books. But when you went in and looked at the carrying value, and since it was a held for investment portfolio, obviously it wasn't marked to market, but they were setting up loan loss provisions. I mean, when you went in and did the due diligence, was your team finding that additional provisions were required?
Yeah, as I recall, yes. I think it was across the board, and I think it was more acute on the pay option. That's my recollection.
And do you recall having any discussions with anyone at Countrywide about the asset valuations?
I mean, we had a lot of back and forth. I didn't individually do it, but our people were having discussions about it.
Okay. Did you? I take it at some point you had discussions with Mr. Mazzillo about both the equity investment and the subsequent acquisition.
Actually, I had. The only face-to-face I had with him was around the pricing of the preferred stock.
Can you just tell us about those conversations?
Just that we were a little far apart. We had an interest rate in mind or a coupon in mind, and so I went out there, sat down with him, and we agreed on that particular rate.
Okay. Other than the face-to-face with Mr. When you say out there, I take it you mean Calabasas.
It's Calabasas.
Right. Other than that face-to-face meeting about the coupon on the $2 billion preferred stock investment, there was not any other face-to-face meeting with Mr. Mazzillo regarding?
No.
Okay. And understanding there weren't face-to-face meetings, were there any non-face-to-face meetings with Mr. Mazzillo on the acquisition of the company by B of A?
I think I had one more, but I'm not sure. Again, Greg was handling that much more so than I was.
Okay. So what was, and when you say Greg, you mean Mr. Curl, I take it.
Yes.
And when, just so the record's clear. And what was Mr. Curl reporting to you about those negotiations? We know it eventually came to be $4 billion, but walk us through, if you can, what the major difficult points were in terms of the negotiations.
Well, there really weren't a lot because we were not going to. There were no social issues that we had to deal with Angelo, for instance, Mr. Mazzillo, for instance. He knew he would leave at the time of the acquisition. There were no issues around directors, and so it was all about price. And we had something in mind, and. Turned out to be something called $4 billion, and that was it was a little more one-sided than usually you have in these situations.
They were not in a relative position of strength.
No.
So the deal, I think, closes in July of 2008, and there were at least, I believe, reports in the financial press about B of A considering walking away from the deal. Was that in fact the case?
I have no recollection of that.
Okay. So were there any issues that came up then between the January 11, 2008 announcement and the closing of the deal? And I recognize that's a fairly general question.
Yeah, not that I remember. We had the normal, you know, people going out, who was going to be running what, and us, the typical kind of merger issues that you deal with. I can't recall anything that was extraordinary that you wouldn't be doing the normal course of something like that.
There wasn't any discovery of holy blank. We didn't know about that.
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. No. What about any discussions with the regulators during this time frame? What were they in general, both going back to August of 2007 and through to the closing in July of 2008? For example, you had mentioned that Mr. Curl got a call from someone at Countrywide that initiated the $2 billion investment. Was anyone in the government asking B of A to help out with the Countrywide situation?
No, the involvement, I would say, with... let me go step back. I'm not sure the initial contact with somebody from Countrywide to Mr. Curl. It could have been an investment banker or somebody,
sure.
But he was the person. I would say their involvement was keen interest. Otherwise, if I were to have a conversation with somebody at the Fed or the OCC with John Dugan, they would ask me about how it was coming, how we felt. Or
we need to tread lightly here because we're, you know, bank supervisory privilege, yeah. Direct conversations with the regulators. We don't want to get into the details of that, and you know that. But let me tell you what our impressions were.
Interested, yeah. but no one. No one asked us to do the deal.
Okay. And so you mentioned Mr. Dugan. Who were you talking to at the Fed?
Well, if I would have, I guess, more conversations with the Jeff Lacker than any other one person because he's head of the Richmond Fed. But I don't recall any conversation that Countrywide was the initial subject. It would come up during the conversation after other things were talked about.
Mm-hmm. What about Countrywide's regulator? They had somewhat recently, gone from a bank charter to a thrift charter, so they were now being regulated by the OTS instead of the Fed and the OCC. Were you having discussions with the OTS folk?
I was personally not having.
Okay. Well, I take it people at B of A were having discussions.
Yeah.
You're not aware of those conversations, I take it. Okay. Generally, other than keen interest, were the Fed, the OCC, or the OTS, were you hearing? What kind of concerns did they have, if any?
And again, just be careful not to repeat the conversations with the regulator.
Yeah, I would just say they were knowledgeable of Countrywide. There was an FDIC connection, obviously, but the conversations were always very high level and of interest, nothing coercive.
Mm-hmm. Any discussions with anyone from Treasury?
Same kind of, I think at least one time I was asked about it, but by Paulson, but again, it was kind of status as opposed to anything else.
And again, this ballpark timing, is this back in the $2 billion August 2007 capital raise?
I can't remember.
Okay. There have been reports, anyway, in the financial press, and maybe we've even seen it or heard it in other interviews or documents, that there was discussions about potential capital relief to B of A for taking on Countrywide. Were there any such discussions?
I never had a discussion about capital relief. I don't speak for everybody, but I was not expecting capital relief as a result of the transaction.
And do you recall, understanding you didn't have any discussions with folks about capital relief, Mr. Curl or others within B of A reporting to you about that subject?
I don't remember them doing that.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Chris?
No, this is, I think, the Beloukis report.
Let's say, for 700 pages, that'd be very impressive.
Indeed. And I will. Mr. Beloukis, at least, reports on page 702 of the Lehman Report that Mr. Curl had expressed frustration to Mr. Paulson over the fact that the government had approved the countrywide deal but later required remedial steps to be taken regarding capital that negatively affected Bank of America. And I will tell you that I have seen in... It was either reported in the financial press or one of the many books that in July of 08, when reportedly Mr. Paulson contacts you about, hey, please take a look at Lehman Brothers, that at that time, in that ballpark time frame, that I think Mr. Curl may have talked to Mr. Wilson, Ken Wilson at Treasury, about, hey, you know, you want us to look at Lehman, but... You know, Mr.
I think it's Lacker. Is Lacker?
Lacker.
Yeah, Lacker, you know, is threatening to make us cut our dividend. You know, because the Fed is concerned about our capital position in light of the countrywide acquisition. If you want us to look at Lehman, you know, you got to make good on the implicit, apparently anyway, agreement that we were going to get capital relief for taking on countrywide. Does all of that jog any memory?
No, I think that's two different things, and I'm not sure how much I can talk about. What the regulators did, asking for regulatory relief, and being surprised at them taking an action we didn't expect them to take are two different things, mm-hmm. And I think the latter is what they're talking about.
Okay, so let's go to the let's try to separate them. Then is it in fact accurate that at, I guess, some point in 08, the Richmond Fed was saying, we're concerned about your capital and we may want you to reduce your dividend.
You can't talk about what they may have said.
Let me make it more general. Yeah. Was there a time in 2008 when the regulators expressed concern about capital and including discussions about B of A reducing their dividend?
We can't.
It's the same thing.
But it's not naming people.
Okay. Yeah, I think in a broad sense, they were saying that to virtually everybody. There was a concern about capital. There was also a market phenomenon taking place in that banks had been run by, with their Tier 1 capital ratios as being the primary way you looked at your leverage. And the market was now saying we want tangible common equity as the way you look at it,
right.
And so that was going on as well. So there was the market forces and to some degree the Fed kind of were in sync that you need to look very carefully at your tangible equity ratios.
So when the transaction actually closes and B of A now owns Countrywide in, I think it's the July 2008 time frame. Granted, you've had almost a year now of looking at this company from the equity investment forward, but any surprises found after the closing?
Yeah, I haven't talked to anyone about Countrywide since I left, and so it's been, almost 11 months. So I wouldn't know any more than what you've read in the press.
Okay. And then in terms of generally describe to us what kinds of changes were made to the types of loans that Countrywide, now under the B of A umbrella, was originating, if there were any changes.
Yes, they immediately conformed to our policies, the type of loans we were making. And I don't know how that evolved, but it seemed like it was they were mainly making FHA loans for quite some time after we bought them, just because of the times.
And was that a fairly substantial impact, migrating them to B of A's origination standards?
I don't recall how far they had gotten on their own, but it certainly wasn't a surprise to them that they're going to use our policies going forward.
Was that when did that migration start?
sometime before the acquisition. I don't know a date, but it my recollection is it was several months. It wasn't just a immediate thing.
But, so let me see if some dates may jog some memory bells. For example, on January 11th, 2008, the deal, the $4 billion acquisition deal, is announced. Did it start by then or shortly after that point?
I don't know. All I know is that we communicated to them that they were going to go to our standards, and I do remember that they said they had begun to tighten their standards anyway.
Mm-hmm. Any pushback on Countrywide from migrating to B of A standards?
Yeah.
Okay, let me back up in time a little, since I said I'd go chronological and I didn't, but different institution. I want to talk about Merrill, and we're mainly going to talk about Merrill in 08, but first, let's go back to October of 07. There have been reports, and I think I've even seen this in documents to verify it, that Mr. O'Neill, when he was CEO of Merrill, contacted you and met with you about a possible acquisition in the October 2007 timeframe. Is that accurate?
That is true.
Can you just describe that meeting for us, please?
It was a relatively short meeting. I don't recall exactly who had contacted who and all of that, but we met one afternoon, and I went over our company, and then we had some information about what the combined company would look like. And after we talked a while, he expressed that he didn't think the deal would work and that it wouldn't be doable, and he left, and I did not hear from him again.
Okay. Now, I will tell you that they announced their third quarter numbers on, I want to say, October 24th, 2007, and that was the quarter where they first announced losses. That was the about $7.9 billion, I think, $6.9 of which was on the retained CDO positions, another billion on other subprime retained interests. Do you recall if it was before or after that announcement?
I don't.
He retired, or announced his retirement, on October 30th. Do you recall that the meeting was in October?
Yes, I do. I do recall that it was before he retired, mm-hmm. So it happened.
Right. I just wanted to make sure. and then I've at least seen reports that during this meeting, he indicated that, you know, he was interested in doing a deal for $90 to $100 a share, which was, I think they were trading maybe in the 70s, maybe less than that at the time. Does that sound familiar?
Yes.
How did he mention that in the October meeting?
Yes.
And what was the response?
I didn't respond. I just I said, we'll have to just look at what we think is a fair price. We haven't gotten to that point.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's been reports, at least I think in Sorkin's book, that during this meeting he disappeared into the bathroom for 20 minutes, and you guys were worried and wondering what was going on. I just want to ask, you know, what were the circumstances behind the reported disappearance if it was in fact true?
I don't know.
Okay. All I'm getting at is what was it, a result of a disagreement in negotiations, or I mean, was?
No, as I recall, this was when he got there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now we certainly know when you get to Lehman Weekend that there are discussions with Mr. Fain that lead to the acquisition. Before Lehman Weekend and the discussions with Mr. Fain and his people, are there discussions between B of A and Merrill Lynch about a potential deal?
Before that weekend?
Yeah, between the October 2007 meeting with Mr. O'Neill and that weekend.
I don't recall another one. Not me. I did not, to the best of my recollection.
Okay. So let's continue to try to go chronological, which I think means we now go to Lehman. But if you can, just again, generally walk us through the chronology of events with the negotiations with Lehman.
I was invited to a Federal Reserve dinner that Geithner was hosting for Paulson. And I think it was Hank, or Secretary Paulson, who said, would you at least talk to Dick Fool about some, you know, about an acquisition, some arrangement? And I said, yeah, we'll do that. And so after that dinner, a meeting room had been arranged for Dick and I to meet. And I can't recall the date of that dinner.
Reportedly, it was July 21st.
Could have been so. And I met with Dick, and he proposed or was selling the fact that it'd be a great acquisition. It'd be the combination would be very powerful investment bank. And I said we would begin to look at it. And so that was the beginning.
Okay. Now, it's at least been reported that before that July 21 meeting, assuming that that's the right date, that Mr. Fold had been calling you for weeks to try to talk about a potential deal. Is that accurate, do you know?
I don't remember that. I do remember that at some point Greg Curl met and something was proposed that would put the two investment banks together as a separate entity, and we would have an ownership position in that. And I did not like that concept and said no, and so we just broke off there. And so that could have been the phone calls.
But those discussions with Mr. Curl predated the meeting at the New York Fed?
They predated, to the best of my knowledge, they did. I mean, there were two separate events. I do recall that there was that event, and then there was the more serious due diligence, because we cut the other one off at that concept.
And why was that? Why didn't you like that
just,
concept?
I just not have liked not having full control.
Okay. So after the meeting at the New York Fed with Mr. Fold, what happens next?
We began conversations and discussions, and somewhere during that time frame, we actually go in and start looking at the books. And that's more toward the September time frame, because, more toward the Lehman weekend, as you call it. It's the Merrill Lynch weekend for me, but it's generally the Lehman.
Right. So before we get to September, let me at least ask you, because we've seen, and again, I apologize for not being able to differentiate whether it's financial reports or documents we've seen. It's probably both. But it's apparently a couple of days after the meeting with Mr. Fold at the New York Fed, it reported that you called Mr. Fold and said that you didn't think it would work, and then that was apparently the end of discussions until we get to Lehman or Merrill weekend, depending on your perspective.
That must have been when we talked about the partial ownership, and then there's the sex. There were two events. I couldn't put them together in terms of exactly when.
Okay. So in the July meeting, in the July 2008 meeting with Mr. Fold, at that time his only interest was selling a minority stake in Lehman?
That was his solution, yes.
Mm-hmm. And at that time, do you tell him, look, we may be interested in buying the entire company, but we're not interested in a minority stake?
No, I just listened, and then we relayed that to him at a later date.
Okay. And do you recall what his response was when you called and said, well, actually, tell me what you called.
Yeah, I didn't call. Greg was the person talking to me.
Okay. But you're under the message that you told Mr. Curl to deliver was?
Was we're not interested in a arrangement where we put the two investment banks together and they are separate from the company.
Okay. And was the message also, if you're interested in selling the entire company to us, discussions can continue?
Okay. I can't say what Greg said, but that was not my intention.
That was not your direction to Mr. Curl?
No, because it just didn't. It wasn't. It didn't do the things that we needed for it to do. It didn't have the international exposure, the big equity base, the capability that we liked.
And so then, after that July those July discussions that, that don't lead anywhere. Any discussions until we get to, it's actually not Lehman weekend, but my understanding is it starts around September 10th when they pre-announce 3Q08 results. But regardless of what day we're talking about, is that when it restarts?
Sometime in that time frame. I don't know exactly the date, but sometime in that time frame. Again, would you look at Lehman? We went in and did.
Okay, and when you so that's what I want you to do is take us through it. But when you say would you look at Lehman, who's asking you to look at Lehman?
As best I can call, Paulson was the one that called.
Okay, and that's what we've seen and heard that he did call again on September 10th and asked you to take another look. Is that consistent with your recollection?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, it's also been reported that during that call that you told Mr. Paulson that, you know, you didn't know what it would do for you folks strategically, but you would consider doing it if it was a good financial deal, but expressed concerns about Mr. Fold's willingness to do that kind of deal, and Mr. Paulson reportedly said, you don't need to worry about Mr. Fold, you can negotiate directly with me. Is that accurate? Can you maybe just walk us through the conversation?
I don't know word for word, but that sounds in general exactly what was said.
Okay. And then anything else you recall from the conversation with Mr. Paulson on the 10th?
I did not.
Okay. So what happens next?
We go in and begin looking at the books, and at some point Paulson made a public statement somewhat around, again, I don't recall specifically what he said, but basically the gist of it was we're not going to bail out Lehman Brothers maybe he didn't even use them specifically. He just said, maybe he just said investment bank. I can't remember that actually. But basically said there wouldn't be government intervention and other failure, other potential failures. And I called him and said, Hank, if that's the case, and I think this was Friday prior to that weekend. And I said, we think, and again, I need license with numbers, but I think we see about a $60 to $70 billion hole here after looking at the securities, and if there's not some government involvement, then there's no way we could do a deal with Lehman. I said, therefore, do you want me to go ahead and just have our people go home? And he said, no. He said, give it just a little bit longer, and I'll call you. I think he said tomorrow morning, and we'll talk again, and see if you can come up with some imaginative solution. And he did call me that next morning, and I said we had not come up with any solution. And he said, "Well, you can go ahead and release your people then," which I did.
So you mentioned there was a $60 to $70 billion hole. What do you mean by that?
Meaning that the markdowns on the securities total that in that range.
Okay. And what types of assets are we talking about?
I didn't do the due diligence, but whatever Lehman would have had, the typical array of product that would be being marked down as the CDOs and etc.
But and I just want to make sure I'm clear. Is the $60 to $70 billion the amount of assets that you think need to be marked down, or is $60 to $70 billion the amount of the markdown?
The amount of the markdown.
Okay. And I will at least tell you from their public filings that, you know, of course the reports have always been, and from folks we've talked to, the real estate assets were the assets that everybody was concerned about. And this is just, feel free to look at it too, Reg and everybody else. It's just a listing of what the real estate related positions were as of year end 06, 07, and then the first three quarters.
Lehman?
This is for Lehman, yes.
Yeah. Hold on 1 second here.
Sure. But you'll... Do you want me to wait?
Yeah.
Okay, sure. That's all public information.
Hmm. He's going to need to see it, yeah.
More of it.
This democracy has to stop.
should have brought copies. I apologize. But as you can see from there, and this is why, because I think I've read in the Veluca's report, too, the $60 to $70 billion number that you just mentioned, the real estate assets, at least on a reported basis on their Qs, were down to $54 billion in 3Q08. And granted, those are after the write-downs that are announced in the pre-announcement on March 10th, so maybe the 2Q08 numbers are the numbers to be looking at. I show that to you to just try to jog memory bells to see if, is the $60 to $70 billion hole just on real estate assets, on other assets?
No, but my impression was, here is the markdown in the portfolio.
Okay.
It wasn't just any one category.
Okay. Okay. And do you, understanding that, do you recall within all of the assets, the types of assets that were of the most concern, that were generating most of the write-downs?
I do.
Do you recall if it was commercial real estate or residential real estate?
I recall real estate being mentioned, but I don't recall amounts and, you know, by category.
Okay. Did you have any discussions with anybody at Lehman about their marks?
I did not.
Okay. I take it, did you have any discussions with anybody at B of A about their discussions with Lehman about Lehman's marks?
No, I did not.
Okay. So you didn't have any, did you have any discussions with Mr. Curl about the asset valuations?
No, I took our valuations at face value. And
When you talked to Mr. Paulson, I think you told me that you told him that you saw a $60 to $70 billion hole, right? What was his response in terms of, well, what was his response?
He didn't try to argue that the, I don't recall him saying anything about that surprises me or doesn't surprise me. He just went right to the fact, we'll stay there for a while and see if we can come up with an imaginative solution.
What, was there any type of written report generated by B of A that quantified the $60 to $70 billion?
I did not see it. It was verbal to me.
Okay. And I understand that there was a verbal report to you. Do you know whether or not there was written documentation behind those valuations?
I do not.
Okay. Okay. So, was that the end of it in terms of Lehman for you folks?
Yes.
Okay. And that was...
Well, I say that. There were phone calls that had been reported that he was still trying to find.
Well, and that is, I mean, and again, I'm kind of just chronologically, I'll ask you about that. But again, what we've seen, and it's consistent with what you said, I think maybe just off by a day, was that after Mr. Paulson initially called you on September 10th, the day of the 3Q08 pre-announcement, that the next day you and Mr. Fold have a call where he essentially tells you, we're going to be partners, I know we're going to get this deal done. Is that accurate with your recollection?
Yes.
Okay. And then it was apparently later that afternoon that you called Paulson with the $60 to $70 billion whole conversation. Is that accurate? Is that consistent with your recollection?
Yeah, I don't remember the days. I just remember the conversations.
Right. Okay. Now, it's also been reported that during that conversation that Mr. Paulson, you know, said, don't send your people home yet. We may be able to figure something out, but wasn't talking about a deal like J.P. Morgan had done with J.P. Morgan, but was talking about a private consortium deal to finance the bad assets. Do you recall any discussion about that?
I recall reading about it, but not he did not discuss that with me. He said, you know, he just asked us to see if we could find a solution, an imaginative solution. I don't ever recall him relaying to me about another way to do it.
Okay. Did he ever give any discussions with Mr. Paulson about the possibility of the government providing assistance to B of A to acquire Lehman?
No, because he when I heard his comments about the government was not going to do that, this is a public statement that he did one afternoon, that prompted my call to tell him that it wouldn't work without some kind of assistance. Mm-hmm. And so that was when I asked him, should we just go ahead and bring our people home? And he said, no, keep them there at least a little bit longer and get your imagination hat on in terms of the solution.
It's just process check. We were planning on a couple hours, and we were around 11:55. I know you've got a couple more things you want to talk. Yeah. You can stay a little longer.
Okay.
But he's got his cars out there.
Right. So and we'll get. I mean, I don't think we'll go more than 5 or 10 minutes over.
Oh, great.
But you can tell I just want
wonderful.
To.
Wonderful.
September of 08, right? We're close.
We're
good.
Yeah.
Okay, so. Okay, and then, of course, there's the reports. They're probably what you've been asked about more than anything, of after the decision to not go with Lehman, of Mr. Fuld calling your house and your wife having to tell him to stop calling. Right. Are those accurate reports?
Yeah,
okay.
Okay,
so then walk us through, if you can, the negotiations that lead to the Merrill acquisition.
John Thane called me mid-morning, that Saturday morning, and suggested that we get together. I met with him early afternoon to talk about a deal. He initially wanted to talk about a minority interest, and I expressed concern about that and said I wanted to talk more about a full acquisition. Several met that evening, or early evening, and began working on a transaction that would be a full transaction. We had brought our people back in who had been doing due diligence on Lehman, and the process began.
Okay, and my understanding is that the tentative agreement at $29 a share is reached by the end of the day Sunday. Is that accurate?
Yeah, sometime late in the day on, yes, a Sunday. Right.
Okay. Now, once that deal is reached, did B of A ever consider backing out of that deal? I'm sure you're familiar with the reports that there was at least consideration of invoking the material adverse change clause and backing out of the deal. Can you tell us if that's true, and if so, walk us through it?
It is true, and sometime in mid-December, we saw the losses escalating, brought that to the lawyers. It looked, as a non-lawyer, that there was the severity of the losses were high enough that we should at least consider a MAC. We got agreement with legal staff that was the case. And I then called the regulators, including Paulson, to say we were considering calling a MAC.
Mm-hmm. Now, was the losses that you saw in mid-December a result of, you know, additional due diligence on the assets at Merrill that were specific to those assets, or was it because of continuing deterioration in the economy, mix, or what was...
It was information supplied to us by Merrill, and again, even then, they were estimates. But you did have October and November by mm-hmm. that time, and we thought the pace of deterioration was more alarming than it had been previously.
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen the MAC clause, but my understanding from talking to some folks is that it allowed a back out of the deal if the material adverse change was not a result of just a deterioration in market conditions as opposed to asset specific reasons.
Two things: the acceleration we thought was beyond what should be happening, and then secondly, you had a major hole being created in the capital base with the losses that dramatically reduced their equity.
Mm-hmm. So, tell me. Walk us through the negotiations with the Merrill folk and with the government.
There were no negotiations with the Merrill folk. We went to and met with the Fed and the Treasury, and they ask us to pause and let them look at the numbers. And eventually they told us that they thought us calling the MAC would cause systemic risk to the system and would not be good for Bank of America.
And what was your response?
Well, we're going to continue to look at it, but we do think we have a MAC.
Mm-hmm. And so,
but let us look at it. I mean, Secretary of Treasury and the Chairman say that, then it obviously gives you pause, and obviously if it actually would cause systemic risk to the financial system, then that's not good for Bank of America, mm-hmm. which is finally the conclusion I came to and the board came to.
So, and of course, right, we know that the MAC was not invoked and the deal closed. Any other agreements for not invoking the MAC?
Only that that they would work with us in good faith to find a way to fill that hole that was being created by the losses.
They being
the Federal Reserve and the Treasury. Okay.
And these discussions are with Mr. Paulson and who?
And Bernanke.
Okay.
And others, of course, that you know, as you get into the details.
And how would they work to help fill the hole?
Well, we were looking at TARP money or some other form of equity. Mm-hmm. We knew then that the preferred was not really solving that issue of tangible common, but we did not come to a resolution as to what type of equity would be forthcoming or the amount, but we did have their commitment that they would work with us to find a solution.
So I just want to make sure I understand. So there was a commitment by Mr. Bernanke and Mr. Paulson for government assistance, just the type and the amount hadn't been determined yet.
Correct.
Okay. And when was the type and amount determined?
I don't know the date that we finally saw it, but it was well toward the day we announced earnings. And that was the date that we were all focused on, that when we announced earnings and when we announced Merrill Lynch earnings, that we have everything in place so that there's no uncertainty about it.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, we know about the TARP money that B of A got. Was there any other type of government assistance related to the Merrill deal?
There was some that was discussed, and that was a so-called wrap around certain assets, but that never happened.
Okay. So it was just the TARP money?
Just the TARP money.
Okay, and you mentioned there was no negotiations with anyone at Merrill. So the issue of invoking, the potential invoking of the MAC clause was never discussed with anybody at Merrill Lynch?
No.
Okay.
Why is that? There's a reason why you wouldn't have discussed it.
Well, we didn't do it.
Right.
And also...
What would have happened if you had the call?
You would have had an adversarial relationship, and so why create an adversarial relationship when you, in fact... ended up not doing it.
Right. Okay.
The thing was informed after the fact.
Yeah.
Just so you know.
I knew that.
But thank you. Okay, and then, again, so after the Merrill deal closes, understanding you found some things you weren't expecting in the December time frame, find things you weren't expecting after the acquisition closes.
Many people on our board did not, for various reasons, and I don't know, I can't get into this psyche, but that they could not see John as the person to replace me. And I had told...
And when you say John, you mean...
John Thang, excuse me. And I had told John, as we negotiated and as we talked about the future, that he would be running a very important part of our business, and he did have a chance to succeed me, but there was no guarantee because we had some other very good people, and we just have to see how that played out. But that he did have a shot, and I knew that he probably wouldn't want to stick around if he didn't have that. So when I got this feeling from the board, or hear about their feelings, I just went to see him and said, John, I don't think it will be fair. It is fair to you to not tell you this, and you will not have a shot at being the CEO. And it's probably best that we part company because I know you. That's what your ambition is, and so that's what I said.
And what did he say?
Okay. There wasn't a. He may have said a few other things, but it was a very short conversation.
And what were the concerns of the board members with Mr. Thain?
I think two things. I think whether it was his fault or not, the magnitude of that loss in the fourth quarter, they felt he should have some accountability for it. And then I think as they talked to him, I don't think they got a... they felt like they had a passion, that he had a passion around what had happened and focused on fixing it with the intensity that they thought he should have.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I have one last set of questions on a different topic, and that goes back to early or mid 07. And as you may recall, back in June, July 07, the Bear Stearns hedge funds blew up. But apparently they offloaded $4 billion on the B of A. Do you have any familiarity with that transaction?
I remember there was I think it was $4 billion, but I'm not sure of the number. Either transaction or loss. And there was much discussion around our people thinking that there was fraud involved by some Bear Stern people, and that there was that it was a major big deal.
And so, can you just walk us through what happened with the deal? I mean, I must confess, this is not something I'm very up to speed on at all, other than the hedge funds blowing up. But I just learned recently about the B of A $4 billion deal. So, just walk us through what you learned about the transaction and what happened with it.
That's basically it, a huge write-off, and then subsequently, I think we actually sued them, and I guess it's still going on.
Okay.
I was hearing that, I think, in the time frame of August, as things began to really melt down, 07.
Mm-hmm. And then do you recall who the individuals were that were involved in that deal on B of A's side?
I don't recall the individuals. I recall Amy Brinkley and Joe Price talking to me about it. Amy Brinkley is the chief risk officer, and Joe Price is the chief financial officer.
Okay, but I doubt they would have been the ones that negotiated
the
deal, right?
No, they would have been somebody in our capital markets.
Okay, were the folks that negotiated the deal that GUP?
I don't know.
Okay, and you mentioned that there was a big write-off. Do you recall how big the write-off was?
No, I recall a $4 billion number, but I can't recall if that was the amount of the deal or the amount of the write-off.
Okay, and that is the subject of litigation currently?
Correct. Okay. I think that's right.
There was a lawsuit. I don't know whether it's still pending or not. But
I think it was still pending when I was there.
Okay. Mr. Lewis, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Chris.
Appreciate your professionalism. Thank you.